Hello, and welcome to Radically Distinct Radio. I'm your host, Jen Morgan. Today, we're going to talk about managing your personal brand, how to own your authority, why it's important to know your value and negotiate on your behalf, and nerd persona management from a self-described programmer. Today, my guest is a client of mine, Doug Headley. Welcome to the show.
Hiya.
Hiya. How are you doing?
Oh, great. I got a presentation tomorrow, the culmination of 3 months of being at this job.
Yes, and you're excited about it?
Yep. I've got an online presentation. I'm going to put it to a web domain so it can be seen by the CEO later.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And?
There's like five main points, and then and I can break them down or I can speed through them depending on the audience.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And you're excited about this, I can tell.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I have big, big plans.
Well, let me tell you just a little bit to the listeners, just to fill them in and what's going on from Doug from my perspective, since we've worked together. He 3 months ago got a new job, and he came to me and said, I just need to make sure I don't get fired. And I said, and he started talking a little bit about the culture and what was going on at the organization, and they had recently lost a CTO. And so I said, why not try to position yourself as that role? You know, why not go for that role? And so that became just a discussion of, well, how would he do that? What are some of the things that he would do to show up differently? And how, when he got to the point where there's a performance review, he would be able to demonstrate that he had those skills. And so over the last 3 months, he's been doing that, and he's getting ready to do a big presentation to set the course for his career, this organization.
That's right.
That's pretty exciting.
It is.
So let's go back a little bit, because we started out saying self-described programmer. What is a programmer?
Off the beaten path, I play rugby. I like to hit people on the weekends.
Hit people?
Yeah.
In rugby. Okay.
Yeah. Drink beer. Those kind of things where the typical programmer is at home playing board games. At least that's the stereotype. But now there's this influx of frat boyism. I'm not part of that wave. I'm not those guys. But programmer is a good way to describe my personality.
Because you don't want to be typecast as being sort of just a nerd.
Yeah,
just
hipsters. Do they call themselves hipsters? No.
Okay. So programmer is a term that you feel you would identify with if people were going to categorize
yeah.
you.
Yeah. It's okay. The whole beating people up thing, I think.
Makes you feel like a bro.
Right.
Okay. And now, what is your personal brand?
Personal brand is, right now it's Brainiac. That's what I've been using at work.
Okay. And what does that mean? And how did you come up with it?
So big fish, a small pond. I'm the only person who can do what I do. If you pull together everyone's technical knowledge on my floor, I still beat that amalgamized person.
That's why I'm a brainiac, because yeah. I am the smartest one in the room. Okay. Big fish in a small pond. So, all right. So what is it like that? Okay. So just educate me a little bit. If you're a big fish in a small pond, the opposite of that would be a bunch of fish that are the same size as you, obviously, right?
Yeah.
And so what's the difference in terms of how you're perceiving your personal brand, where you might be one amongst many versus being the big fish in a small pond? What's the difference for you and your personal perception?
Lately, I've been taking my salary and saying I make this much an hour, I'm not going to move my desk. Like, I have to move offices at the end of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And then scoffing at the idea that I would do it myself. The jock in me would just like, yeah, no problem. I'll just carry it and, you know, drag it over there.
Okay.
But because I've tried to create a bravado out of salary, using that as a vehicle, no, it's beneath me. If I spend time coding, I'm doing more for the company than that. Make someone else do it.
Okay.
So, yeah, bravado.
Bravado. Okay.
Cultivating it that way.
And how is that a good thing? Because it comes across arrogant.
It does.
It does.
But I'm using it because you know how coders can be antagonistic? They can be like, move, the Nick Burns company computer guy. Mm-hmm. Move.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. They act really arrogant because they're really smart.
Yeah.
And they think everyone around them is terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that it's in the nerd culture, too. Like, it's just something that happens when I don't know, you're on a different level.
And so what I'm trying to understand is why this is a good thing for managing your brand. Like, what is the... So basically it's the bravado that you're having. That's like sort of like the thing you're doing, but let's take it back a little simpler. So big fish in a small pond, what are the benefits and the weaknesses of being that?
Oh yeah. We talked about this. So I get to do what I want. I was like 15 minutes late today. I don't care. I don't have to punch in like everybody else. Yeah. I make my own rules, which is awesome because all I am in charge of is results. And that's how I want to live my life. I'm empowered that way.
Okay.
Right.
And what are some... So big fish in a small pond, you don't have to answer to the same rules as everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And why is that a good thing? I mean, sort of like from the context of the company, because it, again, sounds like... in which I know that there are some other things that would be beneficial to you owning this authority, because you've been given an authority where you are, and people look to you as the smartest person in the company from a technology standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So what I want is more than just, yeah, this is great
I
for me, but why is that good for the company for you to literally take that? I am a big fish and I'm going to own that.
I think because I'm not going to be relatable professionally. So that helps me not get walked over, because the good way to get fired, or no one knows what you do and they can't justify my pay because, you know, I can't justify the work I've done because no one understands like how much time and effort it takes to run a OAuth server or something like that. I need the bravado because it will otherwise. Either way, I don't have a connection with anyone professionally. I am the only fish in the pond, essentially. So bravado works so people think I'm important.
Okay. So...
Because I am. They just don't understand me.
Okay. So one of the weaknesses then that I think that I'm hearing is it's hard. You can't really like talk shop to anybody there. And it makes you feel kind of isolated.
But it does give me that elevation to that CTO level. That's why...
Okay.
Yeah.
But it does start to have like a... So you kind of go have this yin-yang thing.
Up in more mobility. That's what I see it as.
That's what you see it as.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, if I play it right.
If you play it right. Okay. Mm-hmm. We're talking to Doug, like getting yourself in the game, Doug, right now. And I'm trying to like figure out what is it about having this aura or... This bravado, which is what you call it, about being the smartest person in the room, that is, I don't know, good. And what I mean by good is not just an abuse of power,
right,
but an actual benefit to the people around you. You said not to be walked on.
Right.
But what does that actually play out as? Like, how would somebody walk on you as a coder?
They would put me in the basement, or they would move me into a cubicle and they wouldn't talk to me. And there'd be one person in charge of talking to me, and I'd only talk to that person every day. And then I would leave and not have any friends.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you would not be looked at as a leader in that situation.
No, absolutely not.
So okay.
So
you're managing other people's perceptions by not allowing what they think and who wants to talk to you to manage where you end up being seen.
Mm-hmm. I knew there was a reason why we work together. Absolutely.
Okay. Now, let's go back to Brainiac again.
All right.
Brainiac is your personal brand. That can also come across as very arrogant. So, we're touching on things that a lot of people would have a hard time doing what you're doing out of the fear of being taken as a jerk or arrogant or pompous.
Sure.
And so, how do you justify that within yourself?
Ask me that question again differently.
Okay. Why is it important for you personally? What gives you the courage to have this bravado?
Oh, okay.
To show up in the world in a way that some people would be afraid that they'd come across as a jerk?
Yes. Let me get to that. Let me just stop and say that, to clarify, that's my personal brand within the company. So that's kind of a political move or business cultural move that I made. So it doesn't, it's not the whole spectrum of my marketing. Brainiac would be way too arrogant. I would go into like a meeting and not be that smart. Like, I hang out with smart people outside of work. Anyway, yeah, I'm trailing. So the bravado works because I want to be a CTO. I'm not going to get put in a basement. That's like a lion's roar, like aspect to it.
Okay. That's sort of like that, where that rugby part of you comes into play, where you kind of have to peacock around.
Yeah. The peacocking. They can't see in the radio that, but I am strutting around.
Okay. One thing that I know that you've done very well for yourself is negotiating your salary.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for the people listening, I'd like to have you talk a little bit about how do you prepare to go into negotiate for your salary? And what do you see some average coders, meaning other coders, that they tend to do versus what you have done to set yourself apart?
Oh, I do a lot of research. I work 10 hours a day. I'm self-taught, so I've had to fake it till I make it pretty much to this point. But if you work your butt off, you get you don't have any doubt that you're a hard worker.
Mm-hmm.
I do my research. I know what people at my skill level are worth. I always research. I always get two interviews so I can play them off each other, because then I make an extra 10 grand.
Mm-hmm.
Coder advice: if you don't get hired by a recruiter, you can say, "Hey, put that on my salary, because I saved you a lot of money by not going through a recruiter." And boom, that's 10 grand.
Okay.
For your listeners.
Okay. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about this nerd persona management.
Mm hmm.
So one thing that I know about you is you've managed quote unquote nerds, and some of them can be very, very challenging when they're interacting with other people. And first of all, there's them with their interpersonal skills, and then there's working with them professionally, right? Like how they might respect you, because on the one hand, you might hire them because they're more rebellious, technologically, right? They think out of the box and things like that, but then they're maybe more challenging to manage, right?
Oh, yeah.
So this nerd persona that is both sought after for its ability to have, be very smart, but yet sometimes can be very socially awkward.
Yeah.
Right? So how do you manage that for yourself and as you lead other people?
Alcohol. Short answer. You leave it at the door. You go into a bar and you're not there to talk about your nerd shit. You gotta talk about sports. Yeah, yield that your one advantage, because most of the smart people, that's all they do well, you know, because they've compensated their interpersonal skills to be the best. But put yourself, don't do that. Yeah, yield your one advantage, absolutely.
Yield your one advantage. So, meaning if you get through life, people hire you because you're the smartest person. Don't use that in social situations.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Mm-mm.
Okay. So rule.
Or you're not going to, you're not going to grow.
You're not going to grow.
Yeah.
Or be liked.
Or be liked.
Or be liked.
Or be CTO.
Or be CTO. Okay, well, that's very interesting. So tell me what you're passionate about and what drives you to... I mean, I can throw out the idea of going for CTO to lots of different people, and only some people are going to grab it.
Sure.
Right? So what is it within you that makes you show up at this job and the job before and rise to that occasion and actually compete, like attempt to make that happen? You know, what drives you?
Real-time web applications. I like building incredible shit. Well, all right, let me put the marketing spin on it. I want to change the world for the better.
Okay.
Because, yeah, I can use my code for good.
Okay. All right. Now, because I know you, I know I'm going to have to say something about this. I mean, you really are also very nerdy at marketing.
Oh, yeah.
And you come from a marketing perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And you got into coding because you wanted to do something in marketing that required some coding programming knowledge.
Yep.
Right?
Right. So I got out with a PR degree out of college, and... long story short, mass media communications back then was newspapers. Now it's the internet. And I jumped on board that. So I started to learn HTML, CSS, and then dove deeper. Now I'm doing networking and security. They can throw anything at me and I'll just do it.
Okay. And now, I want to get back to the question I asked you, which is what drives you to do those things? Like you said...
real-time web applications?
Real-time web applications.
Yeah. And narrowing the distance between information and when an eyeball see it. Breaking news. Yeah. The more minuscule those moments are, the better.
Okay.
And so that's what a cloud is. It's just like the striving for immediacy. And that's the new hotness.
Okay.
And then on the back end, you move into sentiment analysis and big data crunching. Yeah, I could go off on it.
Okay. So you're passionate about how technology and marketing work together.
Oh, yeah.
In order to drive information for people. Yeah.
You said it better than I did.
Well, that's why you work with me, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And so now from the job that you have now, it's not necessarily that. But it allows you to develop skills that you might be able to use in the future that would be within that?
Yeah. Every day is a different Sudoku puzzle. Doesn't matter the challenge. Yeah, it's not the immediacy that I want, but I still have my after-hours project, so I always stay busy.
Okay.
Even if work's not challenging.
Okay. But okay, so let's go back to now over the last 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
If you've gone in there, you're trying to position yourself in a career path, and you're getting ready to do this presentation about what you've done. Tell us about...
Actually, it's about my future. So the end of 3 months, we had a interview, when you first get your job.
Mm-hmm.
I answered a bunch of questions, and so I asked some my own questions, and one of them was, there's a difference between a job and a career. A career has a clear path. I was wondering if we can discuss what that is and what you had it for me. And he's like, that's a really good question. Let's meet about that specifically later. And tomorrow's later.
Okay.
And so this is about carving out a career path for me. So mm-hmm. my best pitch will be the impression they get as I become a candidate, for a larger role.
Okay. And also, I'd love to hear you talk about during that review. It's a review, right? 3 month review.
Oh, that was yesterday. Tomorrow's the presentation.
Okay. But during the review, didn't you present some results?
Oh, yeah. Pie chart.
Okay. Yeah. I want to hear about the pie chart.
Yeah. It was like the whole team across the hall did about 20,000 record improvements. The all 10 of them, I did 110,000 by myself.
Let me understand that a second.
The pie chart looked very, very thin for those guys.
Okay. And so tell me how you said that.
I had them imagine the pie chart, and I said, well, they've got like a tenth. I don't know. The numbers speak for themselves.
The numbers speak for themselves. Okay. So, and how does that return in from their perspective? Like, how did the people you presented that to, how did they take that?
Hopefully awesome. I'm still not really good at reading my boss.
Oh, you weren't sure
how he took it.
You weren't sure.
Mm-mm.
Okay. But in terms of they had the 20,000 and you had 110, is that what it was?
Yeah.
And what are the units that you were measured?
Records modified.
Records modified?
Yeah.
Okay.
Huge mess up on the migration, lots of data all wrong, and so they had a team hired of temps, right? And then I came in 3 months ago, and they're like, "Hey, can you help out with this?" And then it just blew it away.
Okay.
Yeah. So if 10 of them can do 20,000, they can do what, 1,000 each in 3 months? I did 110,000.
Okay.
In 3 months.
Okay.
By myself. Yeah.
And so did you go so far as to figure out the value of that to the company?
Not yet. That's a good discussion, though.
That would be a good discussion. Okay.
Well, I hope that CTO could be one of those things that's the value point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's no one else.
Well, I think, being able to say, and the value of that starts to, speak at the executive level.
I feel like my job is to personify myself as someone who's likable, not just bravado, but like... like the CEOs would invite to parties, and I wouldn't make an ass of myself.
Okay, likable, but influential.
Absolutely.
Right. And, you want to be able to get stuff done.
Yeah.
Right in the CTO position. Okay. All right. Well, one of the things that I find to be really interesting about you is you're not afraid to, own it and step Absolutely. Out into a position that, you know, we call peacocking or you call bravado. Mm-hmm. So do you have any advice for people who maybe struggle to do that?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
We're talking about the idea of you can bring the nerd to a bar conversation. You can talk about like for me, I love marketing. I love mass media. So we talk about the 30-second spot on a Super Bowl commercial and how much messaging can you fit in there and how cool can you make it versus the other 30 seconds. And oh my God, it costs $4.5 million for that commercial, right? And then now you're talking about the stuff you're really passionate about, but it's topical. Yeah. So
the advice would be to have outside interests that other people can relate to.
Absolutely. Yep. You say it better than I do sometimes. that's what happens. I have to riff on it, and then you're like, here's what you're trying to say, surmised. Yeah, I need that.
Well, it's important feedback for anybody, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
When we were talking about people wanting to talk to you at work. Like they want your time and your attention and you having to get clear about what your hourly rate is and if that conversation was worth your time. Remember we had talked about that?
Wait, what? No.
You're in your office, you put up this bravado and it pushes people away.
Oh yeah. Oh, the glare.
Yeah. Glare, yeah.
So I have a rear view mirror on my monitor. And my desk faces like away from the door. So when someone comes in, I give him a glare through the mirror and it's like, ugh, what do you want? And then before I turn around, and it gives him like a moment to turn around for, you know, without me having to address them. It's like a sneer. It's awesome.
And it works.
It totally works.
And so, but do people who really need to talk to you come in?
Yeah, if they need me, absolutely.
So you force them to be like, is this really important?
No, I never say that.
You just give them the look of, is this really important?
Yeah, I'm taking my headphones off. This better be good.
And what I thought was funny was, why is that a big deal to you? Like, you know, like if to be interrupted. It's something about your work process.
Right. The idea that it's this inertia that I build up, and if I don't have that that pathway towards this coder nirvana, that where I can jam out a bunch of code in like a single album, right? That's what I'm trying to achieve. And then someone comes and bugs me or urgent email, those things ruin it. So like I'll off start listening to looking at Facebook, and then I'll get interrupted and I have to look at Facebook all over again.
to get my mojo going.
Yeah.
Facebook, get your mojo going.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't. I can't not look at Facebook. It's really hard. And if they ever told me that I'd have to stop, I'd be like, screw you guys. There's so much information out there. Yeah, I have to absorb. Like from that channel, it's really good because then I get to see what my friends are talking about.
Okay.
Yeah.
So your working up to getting ready to work includes Facebook. It's like part of your daily routine.
Isn't it everybody's?
Well, I don't necessarily need to check. I mostly check Facebook when I want to stop working or distract myself personally.
Oh.
It's not like part of my morning routine. Like I must do yoga stretches in there for.
Oh, nice. I do coffee and Facebook.
Coffee and Facebook.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that the last thing I wanted to talk to you about is the dichotomy between being successful in your career role and a typical programmer.
Okay. I can frame that into like where I'm at, like successful versus typical. Is that the
like an overall sort of summary of what we've talked about so far?
Yeah.
Because a lot of the things that we're talking about, sort of like the details of how you set yourself apart as a programmer or a coder in the world, or a programmer actually is what you called it. And the way that you framed it to me was that there's a big difference between how the general or the average programmer presents themselves and thinks about themselves in their role versus what you actually need to do to be successful.
Yeah, well, I think you said right there, the bigger half is being conscious of your personal growth. The archetype embodiment of the CTO. You know, I put that suit on and then I go to work.
Before you get the role.
Yeah, before I get the role. So I think that if a new coder has kind of that mentality, and if that's what they want, you know, put that suit on and show up to work like that.
Yeah, like act for the part you want.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, this has been a wonderful interview, and I really appreciate your time.
Oh, happy to do it.
Thanks for being here today. One of the most difficult things that I do with my clients is to help them become aware of how some of their behaviors are inhibiting them from achieving their goals, and then come up with new strategies that empower them to get what they want. And that sounds really coachy, and it is, because, well, it kind of has to be. So when we're talking about is their identity, which is who you are in the world, and that's a very touchy subject. In order for someone to change how they show up in the world, they have to change the way they think about who they are and what they're trying to achieve. And to do that, you have to have an external perspective. Take your pointer finger long ways and rest it on the bridge of your nose. Now look at it. You should be kind of cross-eyed right now. It's hard to see your finger, right? Now extend your arm out in front of you, completely extend it out so that you can see your finger 3 feet in front of you. It's much easier to see it, right? An external perspective gives you clarity that you cannot achieve on your own. I once heard someone say, a fish cannot see the water they are swimming in. Likewise, it's hard to have a clear perception of who you are because you're on the inside looking out. You need someone to give you a reflection so that you can see yourself accurately. I've found that high achievers have a hard time hiring a coach or a consultant like me because they feel that it shows a weakness and that that is a problem. But that mentality is only going to take you so far. My client, Doug, is incredibly talented, both as a programmer and as a marketer. He gets the jobs that he wants. He gets the income that he wants. But when he came to me, he said, Jen, I need to just not get fired for the next 3 months. I knew what he really meant was, I really want to do my best, but I'm concerned I might mess up. He was very excited about his job and he wanted to do his best, but his concerns that he might not were clouding his judgment about how to perform in the best way for him. So instead of playing to win, he was playing to not lose. As you get yourself into higher profile positions, you'll find that that internal struggle will magnify. You'll want to please the people around you so that you can keep your job. But to do your job well often means that you're not going to play nice. You're going to instead play to succeed. And I often got to help people like my client Doug see that if you play to succeed, you're going to not only keep your job, but you're going to put yourself into a situation where you have the choice to figure out where you go next. So the next time you find yourself afraid to mess up, afraid you're not good enough, ask yourself this question. Am I playing to not lose or am I playing to win? Playing to not lose is eventually a losing game. You may hold on to your job a little longer or you may preserve your relationship for a little bit longer, but in the end, you're not going to be happy and that's going to affect your performance. It's just a matter of time. Playing to win requires you to rise to the occasion. Be the person you want others to see you before you have the title, before you have the relationship, before you have the contract. Playing to win is key to being successful and feeling satisfied with the work that you do because you're able to give it your best. So next time you find yourself stuck in self-doubt or concerned you're going to lose out on something that you really want, be radically distinct. Play to win. Thanks for tuning in today. This has been Jen Morgan on Radically Distinct Radio.